you ever walk into a room and feel like you're in the presence of royalty? That's how we are today. We're sitting here with Richard Squirman. And if you haven't heard his name, you haven't been in Colorado Springs for very long.
True.
Richard, you've got some big anniversaries coming up at Poor Richard's. We've got the 50th anniversary of the bookstore. We've got the 30th anniversary of the toy store and the 20th anniversary of Rico's Wine Bar. Congratulations. Those are some big numbers.
Yes.
And not a lot of people in Colorado Springs can celebrate being that long in business. And it's not just business to you either.
Yes, it's been a great ride. And it's hard to believe it's been 50 years. It really is.
It's enough to make you feel old, isn't it?
I know. That's right.
So big anniversaries for the Poor Richard's Complex in downtown Colorado Springs. Next on Loving the Springs.
Where we celebrate the best.
And elevate the rest.
You're listening to Studio 809 Podcasts. This is what community sounds like.
All right, this is going to be a fun episode. I'm Dave Gardner.
I'm Al Brody, and happy to be here.
And I'm Carrie Simison, here with Richard Squirman.
A Colorado Springs institution.
I guess. I'm famous in my own mind.
And in the minds of others.
Maybe others, too.
You are the human that comes to mind when I think of who's done the most for the longest in this community. And I challenge anybody that has lived in the downtown area especially and used it and either has eaten or done anything with politics, your name, the tops, the task, all the things that you've done, thank you.
You're welcome. It's been a great ride. It really has been a real honor because I'm just a restaurant bookstore guy and all of a sudden I get to help make decisions.
Well, I think it's going to be hard, but I think we're going to try to resist the temptation to spend a lot of the episode talking about your individual accomplishments outside of the Poor Richard's Complex. We want to focus on that, but there's no way you can completely divorce those two subjects, right?
Right.
You can't.
I've been in the Springs 25, 30, I don't even know how many years, but Poor Richard's as an institution has basically gone hand in hand in my mind, and I'm sure in thousands and thousands of other people's minds, with welcoming equality, a place for everyone. So when you say I'm just a restaurateur and a bookstore owner, like Poor Richard's has been and still is home to any human being that wants to step their feet through that door. Like, it's that place that since day one when I came here, and it felt like a different political climate, it was someplace I could go and feel like my people were there. I could have a cup of coffee. People were going to smile at me like I'd found my tribe. So it definitely does go hand in hand. Like you said, it'll be hard to not stray, but Poor Richard's, I assume you meant to build it that way, but if you didn't, you sure did a good job making it a place for everyone.
Yes, we did. And I say we because it really should be Poor Patricia's and Richard's. And my wife, Patricia, is my full partner. She does all the design. She created the cafe, the look of the patio, all that. And she oversees all the retail. So I'm just the guy behind the counter with an apron, but she's really the one who's a good business person.
Yeah.
And she joined me in 1990. She moved here from New York City, where I was for a while, for 3 years. I took a sabbatical and ran the businesses remotely and had good people running things. But she came here and really transformed the place in lots of ways that I may not have been able to.
And her taste in greeting cards cost me a good $20 a month, maybe more.
She's so good at it. She's a PhD psychologist. She had her master's degree in community arts management. She worked with kids at risk in Harlem. All these things that she's done in her life. But she's turned out to be as a really, really good merchant. And that's been a great success for us.
Well, June 8th is the big anniversary celebration, and we'll talk in detail later about what's going on Sunday, June 8th. But first, let's talk about the history of the place and you know, why it has become a multi-million dollar empire for you.
That's right. It's rich, not poor.
Do you think that your activism in our community, all the things that you've done for Colorado Springs, is that a part of the success of Poor Richards?
Well, certainly we have a loyal customer base that I think feels, like you said, Carrie, feels comfortable there and comes and supports us because they feel like, you know, we as a business have supported them and their values. And we have a lot of parents and kids. That's another big piece of it. There's not that many kid-friendly places downtown, really. And Josh and John's moving across the street was great. The new playground at Acacia Park is great. But sometimes half of our customers are under 5 years old. And we train our employees well to always look at their feet, and especially when they're moving big pots of soup. But moms and kids especially can feel comfortable there. It's a place where they can be themselves. And we know that kids cry and kids yell. I think I did when I was a kid. So that's just part of it. It's not what we forbid like other restaurants might. We even have a special room for nursing if mothers need it. But having said that, that was the reason why we did the toy store, Patricia and I. But it originally started out as a used bookstore. And I opened it in 1975, my senior year at Colorado College. And I was working in a bookstore there called the Granite Harp Bookstore, and they went out of business. And they owed me money, and I took my pay in books. And I went to Surplus City, where they had these great ammunition cases for 29 cents each. They were beautiful pine boxes, and just take the bullets out. And I would hammer them together and put them on cinder blocks. And I had a little house at 519 North Tejon. I had the front two rooms. And I would go to class, and I actually had a cash box. I had a sales tax chart, a list for people to write down the books that they bought. And every day I'd come back from class, and the cash box would be fuller.
And you weren't a business major. You weren't an English major.
Mm-mm.
But
I ended up doing it. Now, a lot of business in my family background. So that's, I guess it was part of what I did growing up. My father and his uncles, or my uncles, his brothers and his father, started the first discount store in the United States, believe it or not, called the Miracle Mart. And it was in and around Akron, Ohio. They had a little department store in Ravenna, Ohio, near Kent, and ended up turning it into a discount store because they had these ideas about how to get things cheaper to people and to buy things in high volume with low markup. And so for the department store, they would buy things that were, you know, seconds and irregulars and, you know, discontinued, and they brought those things in. And then they didn't have the typical department store in the day, the people that were helping you, people would help themselves. And that was part of their theory. They put lost leaders at the back of the store, like milk and eggs and butter, and they sold those at cost. And, you know, lo and behold, 5 years later, this guy, Sam Walton, shows up and says, I'm going to open up a store in Arkansas, and, you know, it's not going to compete with you, and eventually put our family business out of business. But I grew up in it. I worked there in the summers. I, you know, gave away popcorn at Christmas, and that was just our family business.
So in the 1960s, there was John's Bargain Stores in New York City. Is that about the same time, or was it before that?
They started in 1950.
Okay.
So, yeah. So they were really, there was one in Long Island called Corvettes that was started right around the same time.
I remember Corvettes, yes.
But it was pretty novel back then.
Yeah.
And my grandfather came from Russia. All my grandparents did, Jewish immigrants, leaving, you know, pogroms, terrible place to be. And he pushed a cart. But he had this photographic memory, and he learned all these languages and what people's shoe sizes were and what they loved, what kind of pots they liked, and made enough money to open up a department store.
Wow.
So I'm very proud of that history. I had an easy life compared to them. And anyhow, so I opened up this used bookstore, and then a couple years later, the space where I am right now, 324 North Tejon, opened up. It was a radio supply store. You know, the guy put in speakers and gymnasiums and whatever, but he was leaving, and I thought, well, maybe this would be a good place for a coffee shop bookstore combination, because there had been a few of them out there in the world. And one that I actually really, you know, got to know was called the Trident Bookstore in Boulder, Trident Bookstore and Cafe, and it was co-owned by a person named Kimball Bales. Kimball and I got to know each other. I would go up there and trade books like a you know, used bookstore would. And he said, you should open up a little coffee shop and let me show you how to do this. It's not that hard. And, you know, I learned about all that. My father was getting ready to close down his businesses in 1975, so he had all this equipment that I could go back and get. So, you know, he had snack bars, so he had some refrigerators and sinks. And so I drove back to Akron. I went to, you know, rented a truck and drove it all here. And believe it or not, opened up my Poor Richard's Feed and Read for $8,500.
Wow.
That was an era. My rent was $150 a month. Although after being successful for a couple of years, the landlords doubled it to $300 because they said, you're doing so well, we shouldn't. You know. But it was a, you know, bookstore-restaurant combination. Wherever you were in the bookstore, there were books on the walls. And one day, a book fell off of a wall and landed on somebody's spoon in their soup. And the soup went flying in their face. It wasn't hot. But I thought, I think we need to separate. Plus, it was really hard for people to enjoy eating because everybody was reaching over, excuse me, can I? Yeah. And so we opened up, you know, the bookstore next door. But we started showing movies back then in 1982 because there had been the Flick, which was right here at Willamette and Tejon Street, which was the art cinema, and they had all the good revival films. But it got bought by a person named Richard Bailey from Bailey's Kitchens, the building. And he was a devout Christian and only wanted G-rated movies. Oh. So it had to be The Sound of Music and, you know, all the ones that nobody really wanted to see. So we so we started showing art films in the back of the restaurant.
Art films. Yeah,
so you had to rearrange the restaurant during screenings?
We would take the tables outside, and then we would put in beach chairs, and there were different levels of them because, you know, beach chairs could be right on the ground or, you know, a little bit up and then all the way up. And so that's how people had the graduated seating. And we showed 16-millimeter films and then eventually moved it over to where the toy store is today.
I saw a movie at the Flick. My dad was a big movie fan. And I'm not 100% sure of this, but I'm pretty sure a lot of people, the screen in your living room is bigger than the screen at the Flick was.
Yes. It was a long, narrow space. Yeah. He did have 35-millimeter projector. You know,
wow, did
so
he?
I, because I bought it. And it was from 1948. It was an old monster, but before then we were doing 16-millimeter.
So you upgraded to 35-millimeter.
35-millimeter. And then we showed movies, but we had the bookstore there. So the movie theater was on levels with seats in the middle, and then books on the walls on levels. And then it went into the back and into the basement. But it was, I think to this day, it's the only bookstore or movie theater I know about. And so we would show movies. We talked the city into letting us have a liquor license because people were bringing food, but they brought alcohol. We were the first one in the state of Colorado movie theater to have a liquor license.
You were way ahead of the Alamo Draft House,
yeah,
weren't you?
That's right. And then Kimball ended up moving back to Colorado Springs, and he became my movie manager. And then after a while, he bought my movie theater, and he was doing a much better job than me. He was really studying films. He was very knowledgeable. He had his PhD in English. You know, he was really somebody that could take the time with it. And so he, you know, was bringing movies and being very successful and bringing us business to the rest of the complex. And then, lo and behold, he said, I want to move down to the old Peak Theater. He grew up in the Springs. He loved the Peak. Mm-hmm. And there was lots of other people that helped him finance that move. So he opened up the Peak Theater, and we had the space open And we thought, you know, there's lots of kids and parents coming. And we had a playhouse built by Steve Wood of Concrete Cuts, actually. And it was just this great playhouse. And we thought maybe we should do a toy store. So Patricia and I traveled around the country and went to big toy fairs, and we figured out how to do it. And we borrowed more money than we ever had. This was a $150,000 business, not $8,500. And lo and behold, Beanie Babies came out.
Oh, my gosh.
So Beanie Babies and the Thai company, to this day, I thank them, that they would only sell to small toy stores. They wouldn't sell to Kmart or Walmart or, you know, Target. They would only sell to small stores. And we sold them at the cost that you would normally sell a toy at, which is doubling. They call it keystoning. Mm-hmm. Everybody else was jacking them up. And so we had lines around the block. And so Beanie Babies paid off that loan in about 2 years.
Wow.
Timing is everything.
I know. It's like, it's really lucky. And so that evolved, and we had a children's bookstore next door, and it wasn't doing well. It was the era when Amazon and Borders and Barnes and Noble were taking over, and people were ordering, you know, books online. And so it was when Chinook closed. And so we decided to maybe do this cafe wine bar. And it was really Patricia's brainstorm. If it was me, it would have been like funky and casual, like Poor Richard's, you know, with tables that didn't match and chairs that didn't match. But she said, no, we need to do this right. And so we borrowed more money and we opened up Rico's and really finally had a good stage for people to do entertainment and to do other kinds of events. We always had it in the back of the restaurant. It was always pretty funky. But still that same sort of casual, people can sit, people don't have to order a lot. If somebody is in a group and they don't order anything, we're not going to say anything, because we want to welcome people to stay there. And that's really been the key a lot to our success, is to have that place for people to meet. We have plugs on every table in the wine bar, because we know people are going to come in with their devices. But we hope that people think of us like a home. They may buy, you know, a book or some Christmas presents when they're there, you know, if they're hanging out, or they may get hungry and buy some food. But we want to make sure that everybody is welcome. So we intentionally did not do table service. We thought, well, this is a little fancier Rico's. We could get better tips for our employees. But we didn't want our customers to feel like they couldn't sit there. So lo and behold, we hear that I met my wife there. We decided to get married. We formed this organization there. You know, Citizens Project was formed there. Independent was formed there. You think about all the different plots that were cooked up. Tops is another one. And we decided a long time ago that this would be a place we would want everybody to feel welcome. And it's, you know, got controversial at times. We became a place, a safe place, during Amendment 2. In that era of culture wars, I said I wouldn't get too much into politics, but I'll get a little bit. After Focus moved here in 1988, you know, they were the largest radio ministry in the world.
Aren't they still?
I don't know.
They're
I'm not
up,
sure.
They're
but,
up there.
They could be up there. 26 million listeners, 24 languages.
Close to our listenership.
Yeah, there you go.
And look they, at that.
And their office is right over here where Young Life is today. So they would come in as customers and all that. But having said that, after Amendment 2 passed, it was a tough era to be LGBTQ in Colorado Springs.
Yeah.
And we were the hate city, and we were the hate state. There was a national boycott.
Still gives me goosebumps to hear that about us.
And it really even wasn't the majority of the people here, but we had these loud voices of people that came, this think tanking from other places, to be around Focus, to be working together. And they were not only doing anti-gay initiatives, but they were doing anti-abortion, doing LGBT, you know, in lots of different ways. And it just was a tough time. So we stood up and we said, everybody is welcome here. We are a safe place if you're feeling, you know, uncomfortable out there in the world. And after Amendment 2 passed, a lot of people were afraid to come out and say that they were gay, that they might lose their jobs, they could get kicked out of an apartment. It wasn't an easy time. And so people felt a little safer with me because I wasn't going to lose my job. And I ended up being a spokesperson for this movement. In some ways, not, other people as well, but we had people out in front with crosses and, and people.
Westboro Baptist Church was protesting.
That's right.
They were pretty serious about it, and they chose us as a community to come to.
And they came to Poor Richards the next week. At first, they were Palmer High School, and then I was the vice mayor. And I said, you are not welcome here, and you do not represent this city. This city is much broader than your voice. And, God hates fags, and they were. And so they came back the next week, and it was fun because even Focus and some conservatives on council, Lionel Rivera, they were out there demonstrating with me and all these lesbians with tattoos and earrings and stuff because they felt Westboro went too far. But having said that, that was a big shock for Patricia to come in 1990 and realize that all this was going on, death threats, bricks thrown through our windows, swastikas on the bathroom wall. And she just said, God, there's so many crazy white people here. And why did I move to Colorado Springs?
Because we need you here.
Yeah, that's right.
And you helped incubate the Colorado Springs Independent.
Yes. So John Weiss stayed up in my office for 6 months cooking it up.
Wow.
And I introduced him to everybody I could. And the main reason that he thought it was going to be valuable to be here was because of the culture wars. There was no place for people that are LGBTQ to feel like they had a voice. Every other voice was really, very anti-gay. So that was something that he wanted to do. They had personal ads for men, men seeking men and women seeking women, and they were boycotted. They took all of them out of King Soopers. John really had some courage, and Kathy Eastburn stood up for people way back when. I know I'm rambling on not letting you ask questions.
You are such a tough interview.
I know, that's right. I don't know if you have other questions, but I got involved in local politics, some from the LGBTQ issues. I was thought to be gay when I ran for council the first time by many people. Bob Isaac, the mayor, wouldn't even meet with me because he thought I was gay. And so everybody wanted me to have Patricia in all my ads. And they said that she needed to get a Broadmoor bob, get that, Republican hairstyle, and she wouldn't do that. And
is this when they told you to cut your ponytail?
Yeah, and then I cut my ponytail. They didn't tell – well, actually, it was Mary Lou Makepeace who asked me to be on council, but she said, you got to cut your ponytail. So I thought nobody would notice. And, of course, every article was Swarman, who just cut his ponytail, the gay rights candidate. Yeah,
and we see you're still sporting that do without the ponytail.
Yeah, I know. I miss it. I really do. It kept my ears warm in the winter, especially.
Your lack of ponytail must have made you much better at your job.
Yeah, it did. It really did. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have been a good council person. So I barely got elected, and lo and behold, it just kind of evolved over the years.
Barely got elected, or as the other side would say, overwhelming victory.
That's right. I know. So let me just go on for another 20 minutes, and I'll tell you.
We did joke when we set up this interview that with 50 years of celebration to be talking about, this was going to have to be about a four-hour podcast today.
Yeah, so. That's right. It's a lot. It's a lot. But Patricia and I feel so blessed. We have great employees, long-term employees. We have people that are really knowledgeable. We have book people that have been in the book business for decades. We have toy buyers that collect toys themselves, have hundreds of toys. And we have great staff that really cares about us and cares about our business. And so we feel really blessed. And we have lots of regular customers. Sometimes people come every day. And we have to invite them over for Thanksgiving dinner because we close on Thanksgiving. But it's been a great ride for us. But we want to transition out. So it's probably not a secret out there that we are looking for maybe a good young couple, somebody that can kind of keep the themes going. We're not going to just sell to anybody. We had a brew pub that wanted to buy us out and, put in billiard tables, and we said no. And for us, it's about keeping that sense of community and then keeping our long-term employees. They've been loyal to us, and we don't want that to change. So we're going to be careful who we sell to.
Richard, do you own the building and the business?
Yes, we do.
And are you looking to sell both the building and the business?
Not the building yet. We would be open to it if the buyer of the businesses wants it. But for a while, we would love to have the income, have successful businesses, and it'll be retirement income for us. But, you know, we're definitely open to a first right refusal. If the ideal buyer comes and they won't buy it without buying the building, then we would consider that too.
This story is like a book to me, and I feel like I've maybe even read it. You know, this kind of business that's been such a pillar in our community that everyone who's been here for any amount of time knows, and the opportunity for, you know, someone who's grown up with it to make it their dream. So it feels like a fitting story coming out of a original used bookstore.
Yeah, and it's a great job to get up and go to every day. Patricia and I unbuckle our seatbelts and we go, good, we're going in, and we look forward to it. Now, 3 a.m. when the burglar alarm's off, not, but we've had our share of things that have happened over the years because you've been in business for so long. You know, arson fire and robberies and all the different, you know, lots of people coming and doing things that, you know, are common when you are in business for so long. But boy, great customers. I give an example of a woman had her purse snatched and 30 people from the restaurant went running out and circled the purse snatcher. You know, he threw his knife down and, you know, nobody's going to hurt somebody who's a good customer here. You know? And when we had the fire, we were very underinsured. It was an arsonist. He broke in the middle of the night. He, you know, watched the fire, tried to save lives, you know, like arsonists do. He was a serial arsonist from around the country. He was living upstairs in an apartment. And we were very underinsured, $60,000 policy and probably a $300,000 claim.
Wow.
So we were going to close, and all these people came forward in the community and helped us build back.
That's great.
Yeah, it's really something.
So what does retirement look like for you, Rich?
Well, Patricia teaches Qigong.
Nice.
And she loves it. It's kind of the healthy part of Tai Chi, and she wants to do a lot more of that. She has several classes a week even now, even though she's working quite a bit.
Do you take the classes?
You know, it's not my thing, but I lay and listen when she does it and enjoy that. And then I'll probably stay involved in things. I still have a lot of environmental passions, and I feel like the city should be more proactive in the environmental world. And this is a whole nother conversation that we can go on for an hour. But having said that, we have some challenges. Largest wildland-urban interface in the country, contiguous. We are getting hotter, one of the hottest cities in the Front Range, and we're predicted to have, you know, 30, 40 days over 95 degrees by 45. There's a lot of things that we're not thinking about. We're growing too fast without places for people to recreate. Traffic is getting worse.
Hadn't noticed that.
No. So anyhow, it's another show, but I would love to be involved in some more environmental advocacy until people say, that old councilman, he's too old, and get him out of here.
It's comforting to know that you're going to hang in there. So
yeah.
Thank you.
And then Patricia and I started a little nonprofit called Richard's Rubbish Roundup.
Mm-hmm. She didn't want her name on the rubbish roundup?
No, it turned out to be me, I guess. I don't know why. I guess Richard and Patricia's rubbish roundup didn't have the same ring. But having said that, we have a group that meets every week. Mm-hmm. We have several groups that we meet with, that we outfit, that we make sure are safe. We've had over 800 volunteers, collected 55,000 pounds of garbage. We are out all around the downtown area, especially Monument Valley and the America the Beautiful Park and all that. But we also go up to Sand Creek, to Cottonwood Creek. We do Midland Trail and, you know, do our best to clean up all the garbage that's out there. But boy, it's a daunting task. And then Patricia and I get the groups together for free pizza and beer afterwards. We bribe everybody.
Awesome.
Yes.
Well, mentioning your environmental streak there reminds me there was another venture, short-lived, in this timeline of the growth of the billion-dollar Beanie Baby empire. What was the name of that store?
Conservation Hardware.
Yeah, Conservation Hardware.
Yes.
Tell us briefly about that.
So, yeah, at the time, there weren't faucet aerators or compact fluorescent bulbs. There wasn't, you know, no odor, no chemical paints out there. There just wasn't that much out there. You could get it, but, you know, just you had to hunt hard. So we created a little store called Conservation Hardware, and people could get all those things and then learn about them. And we had classes and people that spoke. And we had it down the street where that co-working space is now. That's just a block right next to Rasta Pasta. But then
Epicentral.
Yeah, Epicentral. Yeah. That's right. And then we ended up moving it into Poor Richard's itself. And then eventually these things became pretty readily available, and some cases required, you know, you had to, when you're building a new house, you have to put in a faucet aerators to make sure you don't waste water. But yeah, that was a big adventure and had lots of good people helping with all that. We put 65,000 light bulbs into homes in Colorado Springs. Mostly low-income homes, we would go in and just, you know, install these compact fluorescents. Now, that, you know, that's not the best ones these days.
I remember having that conversation with you saying, we don't want compact fluorescents. Yeah. LEDs are right LEDs, behind them.
Yeah, and the LEDs were like $25 each.
They were.
But we were able to save, you know, people energy. But it was a great adventure, it really was, and certainly fit with all of our kinds of things that we were doing down there.
So should we talk about what's going on June 8th?
Sounds like there's a big party.
Yes.
I'm all in for a big party.
Yes. So we're having a big party Sunday from 11 to 5, and we're going to have a big jumping, you know, rubber playhouse in the back parking lot for grown-ups. No, I'm sorry, for kids, yeah. And we're going to have face painting. We're going to do story time. We're going to have some poets. We're going to be on the stage of Rico's.
A shout out to Robin Iser, who I know.
Yeah, and lots of good poets. We're going to have music out in the patio. We're going to have prices back to the 1990s. We're going to do 10-cent coffee, 95-cent gazpacho, 250 slices of pizza. That was a little later. We're going to give away lots of other food, cake and ice cream. And we have an employee that's an international hula hoop champion, and she's going to be there doing her hula hooping.
Nice.
And hopefully we'll just have a great celebration with lots of different people that have been our customers for a long time, so we can thank them.
And some live music on the outside
patio.
Yeah,
live music
too,
on the outside patio.
It's definitely something for everyone.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping.
And let me just say, you know, Poor Richard's is in the heart of downtown, and often people are concerned about parking. Parking garages are free on Sunday. So when you come down on Sunday, June 8th, there's a parking garage a block behind you on Cascade and Bijou.
That's right.
Free parking.
Yes.
Like, no excuse to not come down, park in that parking garage, and walk the block over to see you.
Yeah, that's right.
Head over into the park if there's a line and play on the playground a little bit and then come back over.
That's right.
It should be an easy day to get around downtown.
No, that's great. But yeah, we are excited. 50 years is just hard to believe.
So you brought up the music. The Mittgards are going to be performing, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're great.
They are. They're really good.
11 a.m. to 1 p.m., the Mittgards.
Yes.
And then who's this other? I'm not familiar with this.
2 to 4 p.m., we've got Revel and Paul?
Yeah, and they're another duo that's really popular, people really like. They do, you know, bluesy, jazzy kinds of things, and they're two of our long-term favorites. We didn't want to get too loud. We thought people, you know, would want to talk, so we wanted to have more of that acoustic.
And is this whole schedule for Sunday on your website? So if people are looking for what to do at certain times, so if you go to poorrichardsdowntown.com, you can get the kids zone hours, the music hours, the story time hours, when which local authors are reading, and then all day long is the anniversary menu specials.
That's right.
Fantastic.
Exactly. So thank you.
And you know, the patio behind Rico's, it's one of the best patios in town.
Yeah. And you should thank Patricia for that. She really designed it, kept it rustic. And then we have a great gardener, Jeffrey, who's our bookstore manager and major book buyer, is also in the garden tour every year, and he always wins it, and he's just like this incredible resource for us.
And a Doug Rouse mural, correct?
That's right.
Yes.
Got three Doug Rouse murals, including one of me with a ponytail on a ladder with a banner putting books up,
it's worth going just
up
for
on
that.
The shelf. That were banned books at one point.
Probably banned again.
Yeah, that's right. But me with a ponytail.
So one of my very favorite things about walking through Poor Richard's, first of all, I love that you can go from business to business to business without going back outside, that you can just wander from the bookstore into the shop, into the cafe, into the toy store. But I don't think I have ever been in one of your businesses and not run into at least one person I know.
Mm.
When you talk about Colorado Springs feeling like a small community, I think Poor Richard's complex is even the smaller version of that. But if you're trying to stay anonymous, don't go to Poor Richard's.
Yeah, it's probably a good point. Isn't it?
Don't take a first date to Poor Richard's if you're worried about it not working out.
But they do have a back door, so you can sneak
out. Can sneak up.
All the cool people go there.
We have what we call the $6 meetup, where for $6 you can get a unlimited coffee and a piece of quiche or a glass of wine and some cheesy bread or a slice of pizza and some
sodas.
Is this
all day long or just on this Sunday?
All day long as it's three of you or more. Just declare yourself that.
I like
this. We want to have lots of groups meeting there, and we do. We have book clubs. We have all these people. You know, it's a Christian Science group that meets there every week, and we have all kinds of things that we don't even know about. I go up and I go, what are you doing? We're planning this big protest in front of City Hall.
Pikes Peak Permaculture, they're a content partner of Studio 809. They produce episodes of the Peak Environment podcast, which I'm particularly fond of, and they meet every week.
Yes.
They start out at Rico's before Poor Richard's restaurant opens.
And then they go
and then they move to the restaurant.
Yep.
They can't get enough. And I mean, week after week after week, they're never going anywhere else.
No, it's great. And I can join in a little bit on these conversations. And we reserve, too. We reserve that back room if you want to have a little event of your own. We reserve the patio where we have, you know, wedding showers and baby showers and parties. And so for us, it's great to have groups. And we have an event coordinator, Sonia, who can really help you with that. I think I did a good sales job, didn't I? Yeah. Does anybody want to buy the business here?
One last comment about that. You know, when Dick and Judy Noyes decided they needed to retire, it was sad that, you know, the Chinook wasn't something they could sell because of the trajectory of small local bookshops. It's really good to know that we're not going to experience that. It doesn't look like with Poor Richard's.
That's what we hope.
Yeah.
And you know, we own the building and we want to have a good tenant for sure. But, you know, we may get to that point where there's just no choice and nobody wants to do it. Then we're not sure what's going to happen. But we're a long way from that.
Yep.
Tear cover, you know, tried downtown and that didn't work.
Yeah.
But we were grateful because a lot of our regular customers really were loyal to us. We were hoping that we could partner with them. And that's what we've always done as a business. We partner with Chinook. We never sold any new books when they were there. And same thing with Complete Games and Hobbies. We sold the younger kids puzzles and games. They sold the older CJ card. We would go down and say, you carry this line, we'll carry that one. And
wow.
But boy, Tanner Cover, you know, had this new corporate management and they did not want a partner and they wanted to put us out of business. They were going to open up a toy store in their basement and, you know, you're old and you own your building. Why don't you just give it up? And because we thought we could divvy that up a little bit too. But our customers were loyal, which was really, really sweet for us. We felt bad for their employees. They lost their job. You know, they were told on Tuesday that they were closing on Saturday.
Well, their execution was nothing.
It wasn't, just that corporate world, and now they're part of Barnes & Noble. But in the independent book world, the American Booksellers Association even has it as a seminar for their conferences. If you're an independent, you don't open near another independent. When I opened my bookstore, it was Joan Miskus, who was, you know, one of the big person with Tatter Cover all those years, who sat me down and said, don't compete with Chinook. And I said, well, I wasn't going to, but thank you for the advice.
Yeah, I loved Tattered Cover when they were in their lane in Denver on Wynkoop. And it was like, this is an incredible store.
It was great. And they did so much good for the community. And Cherry Creek had a good store. So that's what was hard. It was a tough one for us because there wasn't that much. It was right after the pandemic and there wasn't that much business for everybody.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about the pandemic. That was a tough time to.
Yeah.
You survived.
Yeah, it wasn't easy.
We all had withdrawal while we couldn't get into Rico's.
18 months, we closed the restaurant, 12 months, Rico's, because we were narrow spaces. We had a lot of self-serve, especially a soup and stew bar, and we had these big gas pizza ovens. And so we took the time to remodel and make things all behind the counter. And it took a lot longer. You know, it wasn't easy to get things. And luckily, the toy store and the bookstore were still open, and they were making us somewhat of an income. People were actually reading and, you know, doing puzzles and games. But that was a tough time, really tough.
So Colorado College brought you to Colorado Springs, and somehow we were lucky enough to keep you. You must love something about Colorado Springs.
Yeah, I've always loved the mix of people here, to be honest with you. I know people might like to give us a bad reputation. Even during the culture wars, I think only 38% of the population went to church. But it's that people from other places who come here, military, people that are mostly from smaller towns. It's not like this is this urban environment that, you know, you're going to get the real wealthy transplants. You're going to get now a lot more younger people are moving here because of what I fell in love with, which was the access to the mountains. Mm-hmm. It's just incredible that 10 minutes from where we are right now, we could be on a mountain bike, maybe be on a trail with, you know, a few other people you pass. And we have this great weather. We have, you know, to me, it was paradise. I came from Akron, Ohio, which was at the time tied with Tacoma, Washington for having the least number of sunny days per year. And I watched a lot of Bonanza because my father actually taught Lauren Green how to dance.
Oh, my gosh.
In Veradero Beach, Cuba. My father was a great Latin dancer. My parents both were. And so we, you know, obligatory had to watch Bonanza. I go, boy, beautiful landscapes. And so I applied to schools only in Colorado and got into Colorado College. I got into Loretta Heights College for Women when they were just admitting men. And I thought, well, maybe I should go there because 100 men and 1,000 women. But I ended up at CC.
So, Richard, if you're not eating pizza in your restaurant, is there some place that is kind of your second home for eating out or drinking out?
You know, Patricia and I love Sacred Grounds Cafe in Cheyenne Canyon. And Natasha Snapper is a good, very good friend. And we actually was a neighbor for a while. And we helped raise their kids a little bit because her husband passed away. And she's from Moscow, but very good cook. And she's only open for dinner on Friday and Saturday nights. Sometimes she'll do these special dinners. But breakfast and lunch, she's got this great patio. And you feel like you're in the mountains, right at the base of the canyon. So that's the main place that we go.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for the tip.
Yeah.
Yep. Sure.
If you were going to read a story to a group of children, what spot in Colorado Springs would you pick, and what book would it be?
I would pick a beautiful spot on the Stratton Open Space or in Strawberry Fields and read the Moon book. I can't remember the exact name of it. With
Goodnight Moon.
Goodnight Moon. That's right. That's what I was
hoping. All right. Very cool.
Because I just think that outdoor life, and if kids were outdoors more and away from their cell phones, I think it would be a much healthier planet. But in Colorado Springs, they do it more than most places.
True.
I do love being out on the trails and seeing people of all ages out on their bikes or walking the dogs or walking together. And you know, I think compared to some other cities that the outdoors is not necessarily just out your front and back door, it happens a lot less. But almost any time I'm out riding my bike, you have the mini me, the middle size me, and the full size me riding along. And I love when they teach them the trail etiquette, and you have people with their bike bells or the on your left, and people that understand that when they're walking. And I think the whole education around outside use and outdoor use is important for families.
Yeah, it's really important. And we are lucky. We've gotten, you know, these national awards and everybody brags about, you know, the most desirable city. But we've gotten the best place to mountain bike from, the best city in Colorado to walk a dog from. We have the most dogs over 40 pounds of any city in the country per capita.
Mine's one of those.
People like big dogs. People love that outdoor life, and they love dogs. And when I ran for mayor, there was a group that came together with lots of buttons and signs saying, "Dogs for Richard Scorman." And I was very proud of that.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, Richard, we can't thank you enough for your service to the community and for providing us all a good place to go hang out with all the cool people and for joining us today. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And I've been here too long and too many stories, so it's just, you didn't want to have a four-hour episode.
Yeah.
But I really appreciate this opportunity. Thank you. And it's great to be with all three of you who have been really involved in the community in wonderful ways. So I want the respect to be mutual.
May you and Patricia have a smooth transition into retirement when it actually happens.
That's what we hope.
And I'm glad we'll never have to know what Colorado Springs would look like had Poor Richard's not opened. It would be a certainly much, much different place. But fantastic that you've been here. 50 years of history now.
One person can make a difference.
Yeah, and two people, Patricia.
Okay, we'll give Patricia due credit. So a couple quick news items before we wrap it up. Coming up, actually happening right now, there's an online open house through June 15th for the Front Range Passenger Rail District and Colorado Department of Transportation, showing off some of the near-term and long-term plans for having passenger railroad service in the state.
I wish it was short-term.
Not short-term enough.
2035 for us, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's always 11 years in the future.
Yeah.
No matter what year it is, it's 11 years in the future.
Especially if railroads are involved, that's for sure. But anyway, we'll put a link in the show notes, but it's pretty easy to find. It's FRPR. That's Front Range Passenger Rail. FRPROpenHouse.com. And it's just through June 15th, so I wanted people to know that they might want to check it out if they're passenger service
just
fans.
Just ways to get feedback on what's happening, or?
I don't know if they're inviting feedback. Okay. They'd be crazy if they don't, but they're definitely, it's kind of like a little bit of a show and tell, so you can catch up on
it's a presentation. They've been having, lots of funding issues and talks with the legislature, and so they're going to probably announce their plans. And they're going to do the North Front Range first. Boulder, Fort Collins. And
we're always second on the list.
We are. And boy, the traffic is just... When I came here in 1970, you could drive to Denver and not see a car sometimes for 15 minutes. That was a bygone
era. I can't even tell you. The only time I haven't seen a car for 15 minutes is because I've been asleep.
Yeah, that's right.
That's crazy. And there's something, they're talking about travel time north and south of Denver doubling over the next how many years. So we should be glad that we're down here.
Right. And so I thought that this is where they should invest first, but what do I know?
Then the other thing is Ralph Giordano, who hosts the Independent Film Forum, which is a Studio 809 podcast. He's a pretty skilled photographer, and he's got an exhibition that's opening up at the Cottonwood Center for the Arts. They're doing an opening reception first Friday coming up June 6th at 5:30, so there'll be a reception. But then all during the month of June, his photography is going to be on display, and there's two special journeys that he'll be showing off. One is called Random Life, which is just the past 10 years of stuff he's happened across that he thought, wow, I should take a picture of this. And then the other is called Inked, Skin Deep, The Body as Art.
Tattoos.
Yeah, Ralph is very talented. In fact, he and I put together the first environmental film festival in the United States.
He was involved in that.
He was. U.S. Environmental Film Festival in 1990.
Wow.
So, it's like all this
history. Of course you were involved in that.
I was involved with it,
So we should give another quick shout out to June 6th and June 7th, also launch events for Art on the Streets, which we talked about in our last episode.
Yeah.
Pride Fest is coming up.
Pride Fest is the weekend of the 15th.
There you go. Juneteenth is another one, although they're doing it at the Citadel Mall this year, not downtown.
Oh.
But so those are two good events.
And Bike to Work Day.
June is just packed with stuff to do. Get outside. Get outside, friends.
That's right.
Yes, ma'am.
And start on June 8th at Poor Richard's anniversary party, and then just continue on. Actually, start on June 6th at Art on the Streets, and then continue.
Yeah, then continue. That's right.
Yeah, lots of great stuff going on. Wrapping up, I want to give a big shout out to The Next Us, which is where our Studio 809 Community Podcast Studio is housed. It's a professional cooperative environment for businesses. So it's a co-working space, and it's got a great vibe. And we want to give a lot of love to Judy Pering for having a great vision and for supporting Studio 809 Podcasts. So,
lots of bike parking if you want to bike down and check it out.
And an incredible view.
If you're sitting on my side, especially.
Yeah, this beats the view. Back when we had our studio in the basement at the Indy.
Right.
There was no view.
Yeah, right. I remember that.
Yeah, that was a dungeon.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for being here, and thanks for listening.
Thank you.
In the Pikes Peak region, there's no shortage of activities. Whether you're experiencing breathtaking parks or magnificent works of art, if you're getting fashionable at a film festival, or fresh at a farmer's market, if you want to hear the sweet sounds of a symphony or the smooth shred of a Stratocaster, look no further than Peak Radar, your one-stop shop for all events in the Pikes Peak region, your free source for viewing and posting events. So no matter how you engage with our beautiful region, visit peakradar.com and get plugged into the peak.